We're going to talk about one of the most popular saxophone players. We can call him jazz, we can call him R&B, we can call him pop, and we could call him the founder, the grandpa of smooth jazz. But first, we're going to establish something for you very clearly. You see, Grover Washington Jr. was born in Buffalo, New York in 1943, and he was surrounded by music. His mother, I think, she sang, and the father, he just collected all these jazz albums. So little Grover, he grew up listening to Benny Goodman and Fletcher Henderson and Basie and Elton and all of that. You know, this cat was set for the straight ahead path. By eight, he's already, you know, starting to play the saxophone, and he's got brothers that are musicians as well, so it was a musical family. Grover started sneaking into the blues clubs around Buffalo, New York. I know that area very well. I lived in Erie, Pennsylvania, which is 100 miles away, and did a lot of gigging in Buffalo. So I know that blues scene, that R&B scene, the kind of mixes together. People in Buffalo like the jazz funky with a beat, so they can dance to it and have a good time and shake their head. That informed Grover's musical choices early and later on in life. As a young man, he's playing in the Midwest, Ohio area, with pretty much a lounge band, you know, doing a little R&B covers, some original stuff like that. I think they were called the Four Clefs or something like that. And just as that thing was starting to get real comfortable for him, he ended up getting drafted into the U.S. Army. Ooh, things changed for him all of a sudden. No more, you know, saxophone, playing the clubs, having a good time around Cleveland and all that. No, no, no. You got to go, baby. While in the Army, he met another musician who was in the Army with him. His name was Billy Cobham. Now, we know Billy Cobham from his associations with Miles Davis and, of course, the Mojave Stew Orchestra and many other things. Well, Billy got out of the Army before Grover did. And by the time Grover got out, Billy Cobham was pretty much an established and known entity in the New York area. So he invited Grover to come to New York, man, and, you know, I'll show you around, help you get a couple of gigs, and yada, yada. Well, Grover did this, you know, had a little Mark VI alto at that time. He wasn't playing the Keelworths and the Black Lagerhorns and all that, just a straight up Mark VI like most jazz saxophone players play. So he's doing gigging here, going gigging there, gigging here, gigging there. He's supposed to be doing a backup recording for Hank Crawford, produced by Creed Taylor on his Kudu label. And for some reason, Hank didn't show up. I don't know if he was sick or forgot or whatever, but the studio was there. All the musicians were there. The money is paid. And Creed Taylor goes, you play the sax. You want to lead this thing? That opportunity led to him recording his first album. That's right. And he recorded four or five albums in this period with Creed Taylor, Reed Seed, and you know, a couple other things he did at that time. But the one that really got him going was Inner City Blues. Yeah, Inner City Blues, that got that career started. And it was a big smash. It came out of nowhere. It was a different kind of thing. You see, what Grover was doing was very similar to what David Sanborn was doing and what Bob James was doing and what Dave Gershwin was doing and what Herb Alpert was doing and what Spira Gyra was doing. And you've combined all these influences. These people make up the music that was the kind of forerunner for what we call smooth jazz. Now, they call it R&B or contemporary, whatever, but that's how this thing worked out. At any rate, all of a sudden, Grover is successful on his own. And he has several other albums, like I said, The Reed Seed and, you know, Wine Light and Best Is Yet to Come. You know, he had that great duet with Bill Withers, just the two of us, and great duet with Patti LaBelle. Things are going really, really well for Grover. He actually became very well known for his most popular single tune, one of the most popular albums. It was called Mr. Magic. If you were a saxophone player trying to play gigs in the 80s and you couldn't play Mr. Magic, you were out of a job, because everybody wanted to hear Mr. Magic. That became the signature tune for all saxophone players. So Grover is now gaining in popularity, public acclaim, financial reward. Everything is going just great for him. At this time, he's a fairly young man, middle 50s, doing his thing, winning Grammys, got an album took away, everybody loves him. He goes to do a gig at the Saturday Night Early Show. And while walking around in the green room on a break, he collapses. And before he gets to the hospital, he dies and is pronounced dead at 56 from a heart attack. And we lost a giant in the musical world, but not before he had set us on a path that would create Boney James and Kenny G. As a matter of fact, it is well known among musicians that one of the reasons Kenny G got his early entrance into the solo music career that he has been so successful at was because Grover Washington said so. Because when Kenny G was a little guy just trying to get on the scene, Grover Washington was large and on charge, large and in charge, and just on his word, Kenny was given a chance, and you all know the rest of that history. So let's please remember the contributions of the great pioneer in this new musical genre we call smooth jazz. Let's remember the young man from Buffalo, New York, who started out sneaking in the blues clubs in order to get that funk happening, who played in funk bands, R&B bands all over the Midwest, went to the Army, met his man, Betty Cobham, who helped him launch his career. And had it not been for Hank Crawford missing that recording session, we may never have heard of Grover Washington. But Grover took full advantage of an unexpected opportunity, and we are forever thankful for that and blessed by his wonderful, sweet sounds on the saxophone, most certainly including Mr. Magic, because he was Mr. Magic, baby.